WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today on The Brian Lehrer Show, Congressman Elliot Engel from Westchester and the Bronx. He is one of those Democrats opposed and speaking out against President Obama's Iran deal. But as a new poll shows 2-1 support for the deal nationally, we'll ask, is Engel speaking for you, his constituents? Charles Bagley from the New York Times today on Mayor Bloomberg's rush to pass development projects before the clock runs out and Mayor de Blasio sets new standards. Greenpoint Williamsburg, Domino Sugar Factory lovers, Kingsbridgeites, Midtown Easters, are you listening? We'll talk about that. And an open mic today for any small business owners who want to compete with the big boys for holiday shopping dollars. Did you know that after Black Friday comes Small Business Saturday? We will let you small business owners who sell holiday gifts call in and tell people how they can shop at your place. But first, Bill de Blasio's lesser-known weapon against inequality. Everyone knows about his proposal for universal pre-K to be funded by a small city income tax hike on people making $500,000 or more. But did you know he is also pushing for universal after-school for the middle school grades? Here's about a minute and a half of the mayor-elect in a speech he gave at Columbia University's Children's Summit on Monday.
Today, stand before you ready to mount a strong and consistent fight for the things that will make a difference. And that means free, high-quality, full-day pre-K for every child in New York City. And we need that now. And it means after-school free, after-school programming for every middle school child in the city to reinforce that level of education that was so often ignored, that crucial transcendent moment in a child's education, free and fully available after-school for every middle school child in this city. Now, to do this, we will need resources, and I've said time and time again, we will need dedicated resources, not the kind of resources that get lost in the middle of bad budget battles and deficits. A dedicated revenue stream, and I proposed over a year ago, a tax on those in this city who make $500,000 or more for the next 5 years. It is a small addition to their local taxation. It will make a huge difference in the lives of our children, a transformational difference. It will be an investment that we will feel the positive result of for years and decades to come if we get it right.
Mayor-elect de Blasio on Monday. Hear how he equated the two? Free, fully available pre-K in New York City and free, fully available after school for middle school students. And we'll hear him in a minute go into more detail about his case for after school, but this apparently is also to be funded by that tax hike. Let's welcome Wall Street Journal political reporter Michael Howard Saul. Michael, welcome back to WNYC.
Hey, Brian. Happy Thanksgiving.
And to you. And did I miss something along the way in the campaign season, Michael? Did de Blasio always pair those two things, universal pre-K and universal middle school after school, as the joint core of his education package with the tax hike intended to fund both things, not just the pre-K?
Yes, absolutely. He outlined this proposal at an Abney breakfast in Lower Manhattan in, I believe it was October 2012. So this is now some 3 months before he even launched his campaign, and many people were not paying too much attention to him back in October 2012, and for most of 2013. But yes, he talked about both. He talked about universal pre-K for 4-year-olds, and he also talked about providing after-school programming, you know, between the hours of, say, 3 and 6 p.m. for something like 120,000 middle school students. And the tax proposal that you just mentioned is to pay for both. My recollection was the middle school portion of that was about $190 million, and then the remainder of the revenue generated from that tax proposal would go toward the pre-K.
But it got conflated, or not conflated, it got diminished into a media shorthand of de Blasio's pre-K program. And we don't often talk about the after school in the same breath. So I was struck in that speech how he made it very clear that he is talking about both things. And as you say, the proposal always was for both things. And the tax hike is also for both things. And I wonder, listeners, if we might take a few minutes to hear from some of you about middle school after school. Is there a middle school teacher or principal or parent or anyone else listening who is involved with this kind of thing? Is this the place to start the inequality fight in New York City? How have you seen the difference to a child or the future of a child from middle school after school? 212-433-WNYC or not. Or if they're going to get a tax hike to dedicate it to one or two things, is this really the right place to start to fight inequality? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And let's listen to more of the mayor-elect from Monday's speech. Here he lays out more of the case, and this is certainly more stretch out on this particular topic than we've played on this show before. So I think it's worth a listen. This is about 2 minutes of Mayor-elect Bill de Blasio talking about middle school after school from the same speech at Columbia on Monday.
Few areas of government have seen as much in the way of cutbacks as after school. We have lost 30,000 seats, 30,000 after school seats a year in this city since the year 2008. According to the After School Alliance, nearly one in four kids in this city is left alone and unsupervised once school ends. And of course, almost a half of the city's families are single parent households. So the need is profound. Now you look at the result of kids not having a place to go after school, not having programming, not having support. You know, California did a study, the California Juvenile Crime Prevention Demonstration Project found that after school programs successfully reduced juvenile violence. They looked at 12 high-risk communities, and they found that the likelihood of teens carrying a concealed weapon and the likelihood of youth arrests were reduced by half when after-school programs were available. And we know that it's particularly crucial in the middle school years, and I can tell you this, I like to say, now that Dante and Kiara are a little older, I like to say I am a recovering middle school parent. For anyone who is a parent of middle school children or has taught middle school children, you know exactly what I mean. And I remember when I was a school board member in Brooklyn, there was the area I think drew the deepest concern from parents was why there wasn't more focus on middle school, more support, more of the support enrichment that would help kids at that particularly difficult transitional moment. So we have the model. We have the need. It's time to make this a priority. And as a matter of policy, guarantee that every middle school child in the city has a safe place to go after school where they can continue to learn and grow and do better every single year.
Mayor-elect de Blasio at Columbia University on Monday. Soraya in Brooklyn on WNYC right now. Hi, Soraya. You're on the air.
Hi. I have a kid who's in seventh grade at the moment, and he doesn't have any music or art or anything apart from English and maths. The last 2 years, all they seem to be doing is giving them just straight English and maths, and it's annoying. And they have social science and the other one.
Science.
science and looking at his thing now. But the after school is meant to be for art and everything else, and they've just started it in his middle school. I went to ask when it was happening. They've just started it. It's now end of November. And they said to me it was because of budgetary cuts that they haven't had it up and running before. We need more. We need after school. We need, just if we're not going to be given art in the school, we need it in the after school.
Does your child's school have an after school program? It just doesn't include music and art?
No, they have an after school program. It just wasn't up and running because they didn't have the money.
Right.
So they just started running it now.
Soraya, thank you very much. Good place to start. So, Michael Howard Saul from the Wall Street Journal. This is something that's there. Do you know the political history of this? There's already some kind of mandate for after school, but it's not universal for the sixth, seventh, and eighth graders, right?
Right. My understanding is that there is some programming in some schools. Some of it, I believe, is funded with public funds, and I also believe there, of course, are private dollars that go into some of these programs. But the proposal here, what the mayor-elect is talking about, is as you played earlier, is making it universal so that that every kid in this age group would be able to attend sort of an extended day of programming from 3 to 6, if they chose to do that, and so that's what he's proposing, making it universal and blanket throughout the system.
To the caller's other point, do you know if there are going to be standards for what's included in after school? He does say universal quality pre-K, and as you probably know, the academic community does a lot of research on what makes quality pre-K, what actually sets a kid up for doing better in school in the later years, and what amounts to merely daycare that doesn't actually have that educational impact and that socialization impact and that actually affects inequality down the road. Are they talking about quality after school, like including music and art, or just someplace so the kids aren't out on the streets when they're young teenagers?
They're definitely talking about quality. Exactly what the curriculum is, I think, has yet to be seen. He talked on Monday about creating what he called a working group, a task force that would be responsible for putting together the logistics of setting this up, but also, of course, looking at the content of the programming. And I don't believe, as of this hour, that those details have been fleshed out. But he is talking about putting something together so that this would begin as early as September of the coming year. But yes, I think you're correct in the sense that they are looking for high-quality programming, and the question is whether or not they're going to be able to achieve that and how quickly.
Michael in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a teacher in a middle school here in Brooklyn, and I just wanted to speak to the importance of after-school programming. Actually, my school, I think, is somewhat of an aberration, at least in terms of my experience in speaking with other middle school teachers in Brooklyn. We are resource-rich and have a wide variety of after-school programming available to us, which came about primarily over the fact that we were a school that was slated for closure 2 years ago. So that we have received funds because of that need that was present given our situation. And we also are fortunate that we have a Beacon program, a community-based organization that provides services to the students as well. So we've noticed that with the amount of after-school opportunities that we provide for the children, including academic and athletic, that there has been a great reduction in, you know, disciplinary issues, suspensions, et cetera. And I think it's directly attributable to the fact that the students actually are able to pursue their interests and get academic support in the after-school environment.
Michael, thank you so much for that. And Rachel in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Rachel.
Hi, how are you?
Good. You consult with middle schools on this?
Yes, I do. I consult with middle schools, and I also ran an after-school program in Brooklyn for a number of years in actually de Blasio's old district.
So you like this idea? Is this the place to start?
I think it's a great idea, but I also have concerns, only in the sense that I think you can't just extend the same patterns in elementary school to middle school kids. Their developmental needs are really different. And particularly as they get older, they vote with their feet if the programming isn't meeting their needs. So I consult with a lot of programs that struggle with attendance because they're treating middle school kids like elementary school kids, and they need more opportunities to exercise power and control and to get out of the building and to have more choice. And
that,
so the same model doesn't always apply.
That's such a great point, because the mayor-elect didn't say mandatory after-school programs for middle school students. He said free and universally available. But
exactly.
There's nothing that forces them. So what makes them not vote with their feet, in your experience?
Power and input and voice. Choice, I think, is really key. And also, you can't just extend what they did all day at school to the after-school program. They've had enough of that by the time they get to after-school.
What do they want?
I think citizen schools is a great example of a model that provides kids with apprenticeship opportunities, and that gives them a chance to get out of the building. I know that when I ran the program on days when we did trips, our attendance was 100%, and our days when we didn't really provide enough opportunities for them to have choice, the attendance would drop dramatically. And I also have to stand at the exit of the building and try to kind of coax the kids back in, because once they hit 13, they can pretty much walk out on their own if they want to.
Right. Sounds like you should be on the mayor-elect's after-school working group.
I would look forward to it.
Rachel, thank you very much for your call. So Michael Howard Saul, political reporter for The Wall Street Journal. Something else happened that made news at that Columbia event on Monday, and I was there to moderate a panel for the university later in the program in their childhood summit. So I was sitting with the attendees and not in the press section. But I can tell you, everyone, even not in the media, was surprised by what former Mayor David Dinkins did at the event when he got to ask the first question of de Blasio after the speech. He proposed a different way than de Blasio has been promoting to get the state legislature to find the money for this. That is, not by trying to approve this city income tax hike on the 500,000 plus earners, but a different way. Mayor Dinkins.
I have an idea which I don't think I have publicly stated before. I think I whispered it to your bride once. But I have a suggestion that I would offer for your consideration. There was a time when we had something referred to as a commuter tax. It's an income tax on persons who work in the city but reside outside the city. And I would urge you to have your experts take a good hard look at that, weigh where the votes are in the legislature, and see whether or not this might be more easily done than to put a tax on the wealthy to take care of the rest of us, which I agree with. I think it makes a lot of sense. I think we might have more success with the other.
David Dinkins to Bill de Blasio, but the mayor-elect gently rebuked his former employer and said he thinks his own plan is best for now. So, Michael, what was Dinkins thinking, bringing that up without apparently de Blasio's prior knowledge, even though it wasn't hostile in any way? I'm sure the mayor-elect did not like having that sprung on him.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly wasn't hostile. And of course, like all reporters, anytime there's conflict, journalists just gravitate toward that. But as you just played, I mean, the former mayor did not say at any point that he disagreed with the mayor-elect's funding proposal. He simply suggested that he, in his view, that a commuter tax would be more politically palatable in Albany than the city income tax hike that the mayor-elect has proposed to pay for the pre-K and the after-school programming.
And what about the merits of that argument? I got to chat with Dinkins a little bit afterwards, and he said, look, the state legislators in the city might have a hard time voting for an income tax hike in an election year next year, but they'll vote for restoration of the commuter tax. And personally, with my years of Albany watching, I would tend to count heads differently than he does. I tend to think most Democrats, which means most city lawmakers who go to Albany, most Democrats in the city, which means most city lawmakers, will support their mayor-elect on this, because most of them don't have constituents making $500,000 plus. A few do, and he may lose those votes. But maybe the suburban legislators might also go along because it doesn't affect their constituents. This would only be a tax hike on city residents. But a commuter tax proposal would lose every vote from Long Island and Westchester and Rockland and Putnam and Dutchess. I'm not sure I see Mayor Dinkins' math. Do you?
I don't see his math either. I think your analysis is exactly the same as my analysis, and I think both are going to be tough. But I would agree with you that the income tax proposal would seemingly be more politically palatable than the commuter tax proposal. I mean, right now, all of the people who would be affected by the commuter tax are in some ways getting the benefit of city services. These are people who work in the city but don't live in the city. So right now, they're getting the benefit of city services and not paying anything, and you're asking for them to now be taxed for something that they're already receiving. And so the folks who you mentioned, the suburban lawmakers, it seems very, very unlikely that they would be in favor of this. But with the income tax proposal, there certainly is a movement in Albany, at least from the governor and others, to decrease taxes. But in this case, you have the city asking Albany for permission to tax itself. And as some of your listeners may know, and there's a new Q poll out today saying that both folks statewide and citywide are in support of the mayor-elect's proposal. The mayor-elect certainly ran on this platform quite aggressively over the past year and won by a landslide in November a few weeks ago. So, you know, I think there's probably a stronger argument to be made that this funding mechanism would be easier to get through Albany than the commuter tax, but certainly is going to be a tough road ahead for the mayor-elect, given the governor's stance on taxes.
Well, let's leave it right there. De Blasio did say he might go for reinstatement of the commuter tax for something else later on, so we'll see if he even gets that far. First, he would have to get this city income tax hike on people making $500,000 a year or more to fund his universal pre-K, and now you know, folks, universal middle school after-school program, which he sees as at the heart of his fight against inequality in New York City. Michael Howard Saul, political reporter for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks so much for coming on and talking about it with us.
Thanks for having me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Up next, the case against white lies. Philosopher and secularist Sam Harris says lying to spare people's feelings is not as okay as you think. He will make that case and we'll take your calls coming up next.